Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned into The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us, no matter what we find to bicker about. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322, or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, you can just contact us at bbsradio.com and we'll tell you. Now, the website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or even extra humanly possible, and they're on the station archives. Now, my blog this week is on a point of honor that impacts all Americans. Right now in St. Louis, the Conference for Veterans for Peace is going on. At that conference, many groups and individuals have come together to discuss how to end the war in Iraq and return America to a place of honor among the nations of the world. Part of the honor that has been compromised by what's been happening is the shameful way Americans treat service people. The blog includes a proposal for enforcing decency in government and holding those who have abused their trust accountable for the full cost and implications of their action. Give it a read. Freedom means taking responsibility and holding the guilty responsible. And now, the situation in Iraq continues to deteriorate. Despite the assurances of the Bush administration that they could surge their way to freedom, things really are very bad over there. And this article came to me from Mark Crispin Miller a little earlier, and it was published on Die Spiegel of Germany. I'm going to read this, give you a little snippet of it, and then you should go take a look at it. Iraq set to disintegrate, new study warns. It's no secret that Iraq is a politically, ethnically, and religiously fractured country. But a new study released in Berlin on Wednesday argues that federalism remains the country's last best hope. Otherwise, it may fall apart completely. Quote, already today, the main priority is to prevent Iraq from breaking apart completely. Unquote. That's the sober conclusion of a new study released Wednesday in Berlin on the situation in Iraq. Called Iraq Between Federalism and Collapse, the study argues that there is little hope of a centralized power in Iraq and that the country's future depends on walking the fine line between decentralizing power and civil war. The report, written by terror and Middle East expert Guido Steinberg under the auspices of the German Institute for International and Security Affairs in Berlin, says that a far-reaching decentralization is the country's only hope. And if it fails, the result could be devastating, including the possibility of full-scale civil war complete with foreign intervention. Sort of makes you wonder what would be different, doesn't it? Now, you can get the rest of the report, which I highly recommend, on Mark's site at markcrispinmiller.com or at this show's support site, offthegridstofreedom.blogspot.com. Off the Grids to Freedom will carry the links we talk about here, so give it a look. Now, on elections and what may be coming. A national problem that we need to consider closely here at home was reported on by Dan Rather in The Voting Machine Problem, which most of us have understood for a long time now. The fact that those in the White House are now publicly noticing that these are not reliable, those Diebold machines, could actually signal their next clever, sneaky move. If the means for counting votes is deemed completely unreliable, then arguably they could put off the election. Scary thought. If you look at what has taken place over the last 7 years, you see that major neocon flack John Fund churned out a turgid tome on election frauds, carefully distancing this administration from the Chain of Causality in 2004. Now, he'd actually been asked by the White House and presumably Rove to write the book in 2000 when he missed, for reasons previously stated, a gig as White House speechwriter. Watch for more shocking public exclamations on the issue if they intend this rather obvious ploy. And now, what is happening in presidential politics? This week, the Illinois straw poll took place, and the outcome surprised some people. Ron Paul came in third, breathing down the neck of Fred Thompson, the two of them getting about half what was polled by Mitt Romney. The other candidates were clumped back there with some pretty pathetic showings for, quote-unquote, major contenders. Tom Tancredo, for instance, got 0.33% of the vote. Ron Paul had gotten 18.87% of the vote. John McCain, he came in at 4.12%, and Rudy came in at 11.61%. Just fancy that for major contenders. Now, this is the second poll in which Ron Paul finished second, if you consider who was actually declared. In each of the last two polls, Ron Paul beat both Rudy Giuliani and John McCain. The very first Texas straw poll is coming up in 2 weeks. And the granny warrior, who we've had here on the show, is down there hard at work. This week, look for my article on Linda Honeycutt and her valiant efforts on behalf of the Paul campaign. She will be making an interesting presentation. Should be fun. And this from Steve Martin, Ron Paul meetup organizer from Maine. The Ron Paul headquarters in Michigan is doing some amazing things for the effort. I took part in their weekly conference call tonight with supporters throughout the upper Midwest and was amazed to hear that the McCaw Conference, Michigan's Ames, will indeed have a ton of RP support there, and Dr. Paul will be in part of the entire process on the island. Anyone from any state can register for the Mackinac Conference, show up, and vote in their straw poll. Please check out the details at migop.org. Now, you may remember that it was the chairman of the GOP in Michigan, Saul Anuzis, who said that Ron Paul should not be included in any more forums. But curiously enough, now Saul Anuzis is actually putting on an event for Ron Paul and footing the tab. Amazing. What a turnaround. Yes, they are doing interesting things with the Ron Paul campaign all over the country. So thanks, Steve. And now you can walk for Ron on August 26th. Steve Vinson, a meetup organizer in Los Angeles, has organized 15 states to walk for Ron to and from various points on the map. Check it out in your area or start your own walk. On the Internet, Ron Paul is the candidate, and he's breaking into the non-virtual reality. And now a note on the financial direction of America. The slumping towards an Armageddon of the financial kind continues, with the stock market faltering despite the infusion into the humongous mortgage markets of more money than is decent. Scary stuff. Look for my article on that this next week. And now our thought for the week ahead. Veterans for Peace is meeting now in St. Louis. There are many groups made up of veterans now working against the war in Iraq and for peace, which is not the same thing. Groups and individuals are gathering there to talk and work. Issues include the continued impact of toxic substances on the victims of war, impeachment, ending the present war in Iraq, countering attempts of the Bush administration to glamorize war, to suck in young people, and providing real help for the people of Iraq now and later. A cessation of the present assault on Iraq will not bring peace. Peace is not just the absence of violence. You have to think about that. It's a dynamic state wherein individuals stop using violence, coercion, or deceit to get their way. After the war in Vietnam ended over there, the war against veterans continued here in America. There has been a continuous barrage of quiet war against both veterans and all Americans for generations now. Like the photo of the little girl in Vietnam ravaged by napalm, this continued war is not a single incident or a mistake. Think of it instead as a corporate strategy that uses war as a tool for profit. And while corporations use our government to augment their profits using war to justify buying the death they rain around the world, we must remember who's paying the bill. If you have any doubts, take a look at your tax bill. We were taught that America was saved from the Depression by war. That's another lie in a long string of lies that leads back to the mercantilism that begot this world, shredded by violence, rage, and death. Taxation is theft. Great corporations just get government to do it for them. Now, peace is another matter. The corporate state despises peace because when we live in real peace, there's no fear. People prosper, raising their children, building their communities, worshiping, loving, and realizing their dreams. A peaceful people do not spend money on napalm. They have time to look more deeply into the world around them, notice wrongs, and right them. Therefore, peace is what government and corporations fear most. The cacophony of violence keeps us from noticing. When you're treading water in shark-infested water, you do not think about the fact the IRS just slapped a lien on your home. We have let peace slip through our hands by misunderstanding what peace really is. Peace is justice. Without the healing justice brings, peace cannot root in our hearts, and we cannot forgive. Peace is making sure that no one is left out because each of us matters. Peace is living in community with others using honesty, persuasion, and kindness, and speaking aloud no to deceit, coercion, and violence. As individuals, we can choose to do just that. The next step on that path is to stop letting government use deceit, coercion, and force in our names. To do that, we need to enact justice so peace can find a place in all our hearts. Justice for our military is one step on that path. Both veterans and active military are desperately in need of simple justice. Benefits promised have been withheld to augment the profits of this administration and its cohort of greedy corporate friends. Peace be with you. Help make peace the future we share. And that's going to be what we talk about tonight. To talk about peace, report on the conference and provide his insights into life, the universe, and everything, we have John Heuer with us tonight. John is a Vietnam-era war resister. He refused induction into Nixon's army in 1970 after having visited Vietnam as a merchant seaman in 1968. John's alternative service led him to a small farm in Nova Scotia until he returned to the U.S. to restore his citizenship under President Ford's reconciliation program in 1975. For 4 years, he worked on low-income rural home rehabilitation in central North Carolina, earning Selective Service commendation for fulfilling the requirements of his reconciliation service. During this time, John joined a local grassroots effort, Twin Streams Educational Center, which was inspired by Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, founded by Miles Horton in 1932. Twin Streams continues to work on issues of peace, justice, and community development today. In 2002, John joined Peace First, founded by Church of the Brethren pastor Phil Jones. Following the invasion of Iraq in March 2003, John began to call publicly for the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. In January 2006, John co-founded the grassroots impeachment movement in North Carolina's 4th Congressional District. Since his retirement as an architectural designer at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, John has been working full-time in the national impeachment movement, helping to organize congressional district impeachment committees in North Carolina, facilitating regional impeachment efforts, and promoting the March of the People. And John's life has been one long journey toward peace, and he intends personally to drum this administration out of office. Please welcome John Heuer. John, are you there?
Hello, Melinda. Good to speak with you.
Yes, and it's so nice to have you here to share with us today. And we always try to start by having our guests tell us something about themselves. So tell us a little bit about John. I've told people a little bit about you.
Well, Melinda, I can share with you that I'm speaking from Highlander Research and Educational Center in Newmarket, Tennessee, with a spectacular view southeast from a hilltop looking over the Appalachian Mountains towards the Blue Ridge Line. I was here 28 years ago when we came to to seek inspiration for our efforts in Twin Streams Educational Center about how to build community movements to serve community needs by encouraging citizens to, instead of relying on experts, to become their own experts and identify their needs and work together to identify potential solutions to their problems. And it's a great inspiration for me to be here. I'm here all by myself. It's a conference facility designed for dozens of folks, but it's a very quiet Friday evening here in New Market, Tennessee.
What do you see when you look out?
I see rolling fields going down, freshly mowed and baled hay, cows, and trees, and just cascading ridges of hills and mountains into the southeast vista.
So that sounds just beautiful. And
it's
quiet.
It's the kind of home I would have enjoyed growing up in rather than Detroit, Michigan. Detroit's a good place to be from. Not a pretty city. Lots of problems, certainly under assault by the capital masters assaulting labor organizations. I can share with you that last summer I spent several months up in Michigan caring for my father, who was recovering from cancer surgery, and was glad to be reacquainted with friends and meet new friends in the peace and justice and labor movements. Delighted to learn that the labor movement has been working with Iraqi labor organizations that are poised to begin reconstructing Iraq once the occupation ends. And can share with you also that the Veterans for Peace, of which I am a new associate member since I did not serve in uniform, I was in Vietnam as a merchant seaman, registered in the Coast Guard but not a uniformed veteran, so that my association with Veterans for Peace is as a non-voting member, understandably, and I respect that very much. But the purpose, the mission of Veterans for Peace is the abolishment of war. And it's exciting to be associated with these people. The conference in St. Louis, which is still underway, featured combatants for peace, veterans of the Israeli Defense Forces, and former Palestinian fighters who have come together in fellowship to seek nonviolent, non-military solutions to problems. And I think this is a real hopeful sign. The Veterans for Peace have grown from 800 near their founding, our founding in 1985, now to over 8,000.
So they continued to grow during the period when it wasn't an issue.
The growth has been most exponential since 9/11, when everyone feared that there would be a rush to war, and sadly, indeed,
and they
was.
Were right.
Yeah. So we have exponential growth in Veterans for Peace, also vast, rapid growth in Iraq Veterans Against the War, rapid growth in membership of the Appeal for Redress, which is the only recourse active duty service members have to challenge military campaigns in which they are engaged. They can write directly to their Congress members. And now over 2,600 members of our uniformed service have signed up for the appeal for redress to write directly to their Congress members to oppose the occupation of Iraq.
What kind of response do they tend to get? Do they even hear from them?
Well, I spoke with Iraq Vet Against the War co-founder Shalom in St. Louis on Thursday, and what we're proposing to do is make local peace groups have access to the numbers of the signees for the appeal for redress, which are understandably anonymous to the public, at least, but to make the numbers known so that local peace groups, when they go to our Congress member, and we're visiting with our Congressman David Price on Monday, we can tell him that, you know, these dozens of people, active duty service members, oppose this occupation of Iraq.
So you do call it an occupation so people understand what's really going on there.
An invasion, come occupation. The invasion ended in May of 2003 with George Bush parading in uniform. Of course, he never served in combat, but...
Well, he was busy with other things, right?
Right, yeah. But he paraded on the USS Lincoln under a big banner, Mission Accomplished. So that was the signal that of the end of the invasion and the beginning of the occupation of Iraq.
And I, you know, it's certainly a lot of people had hopes at first because they actually did believe that they had weapons of mass destruction. But of course, since then, we all know that there never were any, which rather changed the complexion of things for people. So, and the people have been through a whole process of having to face the fact that they were that overtly lied to. Usually, it takes them a generation to find out how badly they were lied to.
Well, and it's. Significant that George Bush enjoyed 90% support of the American citizenry after 9/11, not because of anything he did, but because of the position that he held, the office that he occupied. Everyone was rooting for him to do the right thing. And since that time, that support has melted away as citizens come to realize the depth of the betrayal from the Bush-Cheney administration.
Let's stop for a second and talk about something I think is an interesting point. What did you think the right thing was? Because you said that you said those words, the right thing. What was the right thing to have done after 9/11?
Well, one right thing would have been to have an immediate investigation. And the Bush-Cheney administration, of course, postponed any investigation for years. And eventually conducted a whitewash investigation. So as former presidential and congressional candidate Bob Bowman, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, tells us when he visited North Carolina recently, if they have nothing to hide, why are they hiding everything?
Certainly a good point.
So
but
that,
I think a lot of us had other hopes, other things that could have happened at that point.
Yeah, that would have been my first recommendation, investigate how our defense industry broke down, how the most heavily defended airspace in the world for five decades of Washington, D.C., how that defense collapsed.
Well, of course, it raises the question, did it collapse?
Well, it I believe it collapsed.
It could have collapsed or it could have been told to stand down.
Well, in any case, telling
it didn't
to stand
happen.
Down is a form of collapse. But in terms of the invasion of Afghanistan, which was planned prior to 9/11, you may remember that there were calls to bomb Afghanistan with bread. You know.
Yes.
And Donald Rumsfeld's famous quote about, why should we invade Afghanistan? There are no valuable targets. Everything's been destroyed in Afghanistan. There have been proxy wars and invasions by the Soviet Union, for decades. There's hardly anything left standing in Afghanistan. There's no good targets for us. But we still invaded Afghanistan. I was ambivalent about that. But when I talk with my conservative friends, Bush supporters, or former Bush supporters, when Bush invaded Afghanistan in late 2001, he had almost the entire world on his side. You remember the Paris Le Monde said, we are all Americans now.
Right.
After 9/11. If Bush had focused on Afghanistan, despite my reservations about the invasion and occupation, if he had focused international attention on rebuilding Afghanistan, there was some chance for success there. But that was not his real objective, as we know now. Bush wanted to go to war. He told his trusted family biographer, Mickey Herskowitz, in 1999, when he was still governor of Texas, that his ambition as president was to go to war and be seen as a successful war president.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would be able to enact his entire agenda, which apparently is dismantling the New Deal from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, of providing a basic safety net of security for particularly elderly citizens, but generally citizens at risk. And that was his program, and he wanted to go to war, and it was not a matter that bothered his conscience that people would be killed and maimed and displaced. Because he doesn't seem to be a matter of conscience.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that agree with you. Certainly, if you take a look at what happened with the quote-unquote Bush Library at SMU, you know, he consistently has refused to meet with the bishops of his own church.
Well, the Methodist Church was vehement in its opposition, as almost all religious orders in the United States, to the invasion of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Leading up to the invasion of Iraq, we saw the largest peace demonstrations ever on this planet. 60 million of people, more than that, demonstrated against the proposed invasion in hundreds of cities around the world, on every continent in the world. It was indeed an effect of George Bush uniting the world against the proposed invasion. But his promulgations of fear, the fear-mongering, the smoking gun, the mushroom cloud, persuaded about half the citizens of the U.S. to support the invasion.
Well, they had the anthrax issue, too.
Ah.
That scared people. Remember, that happened just as they were doing the Patriot Act.
Well, and the anthrax may still scare people, may still scare Congress members from opposing this administration.
And that's certainly something that has been bruited about, that that's one of the reasons they're afraid that they'll be targeted personally, which, you know, I could see why they would be afraid, but then perhaps they shouldn't be in Congress.
Right.
That would be a good thing if they left.
Well, and the first Treasury Secretary of the Bush administration came out and exposed the administration for the very first cabinet meeting. How can we attack Iraq? That was their number one item on their agenda. And when questioned by journalists of why the former Treasury Secretary exposed himself to Bush administration retaliation, he explained that, well, I'm rich, what can they do against me? But that's the last we heard of him.
You know, that's right. It makes you sort of pause and wonder what happened.
And just the fact that the anthrax, the only thing we know about the anthrax attacks on the Democratic leadership in Congress following 9/11 was that the anthrax that was used was manufactured in an American weapons lab.
Right, well, and
that's
we know that.
That's the only thing we know.
But that didn't come out for a long time.
But why? What's happened to the investigation? Why has nobody pursued this?
Well, I think we know why nobody's pursuing it. This is a rhetorical question, right?
Yeah, okay.
There's and one of the things about this whole, you know, the whole group, this whole administration, is that there's so much to object to, it's hard to find the breath to do it. It was like a toxic attack of neoconism. Because who could have imagined so many people doing so many bizarre, weird things? It just defied the imagination. At least it did so for me. Mind-boggling.
Well, Melinda, it was interesting just in the last couple of years to see some of the architects, William F. Buckley, Francis Fukuyama, recant their whole neocon agenda, that this whole United States empire, this full spectrum dominance of the planet and the heavens, was a bad idea.
Well, yes, that's happened, and you can see that. Wait a minute, we didn't mean it quite that literally. You could like, well, let's rethink this for a second, and so you have to think better of them for that, of course. But still, it's not enough. Tell us a little bit about the conference. You were there. There were lots of people there. What issues were most at point and under discussion?
Well, Melinda, for a frame of reference, there are 30 workshops. There are still some are still underway at the Veterans Convention. That's a lot for one person to try to attend to. Although, in terms of for a point of reference, in terms of scale, at the U.S. Social Forum in Atlanta back in June, there were 950 workshops. We had a meeting back in North Carolina after the Social Forum. with 7 participants that had gone to Atlanta, and it was very much a case of blind people describing sensations of an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very disappointed that I didn't go with a whole team of folks from Nova Scotia, North Carolina, so that we could cover each of these workshops. I hope that there's good coverage, and I'm confident that there will be some at the Veterans for Peace website, because they were all very thoughtfully considered and designed. Each of the presenters, very well informed. And as you discussed in your introduction, concerns of veterans' health benefits being systematically denied in a basically a case of criminal racketeering for the denial of veterans' benefits,
mm-hmm.
waiting until veterans die before they even consider granting benefits. To the Santa Barbara replacement of junior ROTC programs with Peace Institute to provide the same leadership characteristics of fitness and leadership and citizenship that are paraded under the banner of the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, only in the context of peace education, the history, successes of nonviolent resistance to oppression.
So well, that's a good thing for kids to get.
And also extremely informative and well-educated presenters on issues in the Middle East, both in Iraq, Iran, Palestine, Israel, the whole issue of American imperialism in the Middle East, issues of affluenza, how the American lifestyle is non-negotiable, according to George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr., when, in fact, the American lifestyle is putting the entire planet at risk.
Well, it is doing that, and in many ways, Americans don't even realize it because that's not brought to point for them. They don't see it. You know, and Americans, they keep their heads down. They're struggling at this point to just make their mortgage payments. It's very hard to make that kind of transition if you don't see any pattern for doing it.
And the mainstream media is basically a Disney News. It's a Mickey Mouse News where people turn on the television news and they get news about the entertainment industry, and then they get commercials hawking entertainment, which is both a distraction and an obfuscation and a kind of a censorship that people don't know what's going on. And it's not just the commercial news networks. It's our whole culture. I just retired from the University of North Carolina in December, and every year there would be a freshman convocation of new students, incoming students, and there would be a parade of the esteemed history of, in this case, North Carolina Chapel Hill, the oldest public university in the country, and the celebration of itself as an institution and its administrators as leaders of this esteemed institution, you would never know the country was at war.
Yeah, yes, and that certainly wasn't true in World War II. Everybody was involved. Everybody was working. They were saving tinfoil. They were, you know, knitting for the troops. They were doing things. And that had been true with every previous war that we'd ever had.
So the American Academy has been a very tragic failure to hold public institutions accountable for crimes of all varieties. And this is one of the reasons why we're encouraging students that this fall, if you want to get a credential to be a servant to the empire, go to school. But if you want an education, come to Washington, D.C. Join Mario Canalves' March of the People. Join
mm-hmm.
the March from Richmond. Come to Washington, D.C. Learn how to make peace. Bring your drums.
And that's what you're taking your drum, and your son is already on his way there, right?
Right. We met Mario Canalves, who left Chicago on June 21st. We met Mario in Youngstown, Ohio, week ago Tuesday, and my son has been marching with Mario since then, and part of my purpose in being in St. Louis was encouraging Veterans for Peace organizations and other organizations, Code Pink, World Can't Wait, all and faith groups to support the move to come to Washington, D.C., leave your guns home, bring your drums to Capitol Hill until we drum this administration out of office and we reclaim our government.
Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, something you're doing symbolically, but there's a lot of truth to the need for the need to do that, because really what you're saying is that the people need to come together and take back their government.
And if you can't come to D.C., go to your state house, go to your congresswoman's office, and hang out. Stay. Don't leave. Don't go for a day. Go to stay.
I like that. That even rhymes.
Well, and Melinda, I can share with you that the main thing I bring back from St. Louis is this extraordinary fellowship of people who come together with very many common experiences, but definitely a common purpose to resist the dishonesty, the falsehoods, the deceits of our government. And you might recall that Daniel Ellsberg exposed the deceits of several administrations, Republican and Democratic, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon. And one of the problems is that when the government commits U.S. armed service folks to conflict, then the people really want to believe very desperately that the government is acting honorably.
Well, the alternative is so horrific.
And that's why Daniel Ellsberg was threatened with death. He was threatened with hundreds of years of imprisonment for what was his crime? Exposing the truth, exposing the government's history of deceit.
Well, and of course, he acted very heroically, because that's exactly what people need done when that happens. And is there a sense, I mean, you were there, was there a sense of urgency and real coming together now?
Well, Melinda, I have alternative perspectives to share with you. Chuck Fager is the director of Quaker House in Fayetteville, North Carolina, at Fort Bragg. And Fort Bragg is home to special forces. Is basically the nation's launching pad for invasions. And the Quaker House has been there now for over 30 years. Chuck Fager has been director for several years. And his perspective is that the Quakers, it took them practically 400 years to outlaw slavery, generally, in most legal societies, at least. And so he's looking to recruit the next generation of leaders in the peace movement and justice movement. But an alternative perspective is that we haven't got that much time. We might not have another 400 years.
Well, we don't.
With the climate crisis, with the violent imperial agenda of the Bush-Cheney administration, with our view is that it is 1776 now all over again, only the stakes are higher for us, because that King George had the destructive equivalent of a single arrow compared to this King George.
Well, that's certainly true. And so there was a real awareness of the urgency of what needs to happen.
Impeachment was very high on the agenda. Many of the Veterans for Peace at the convention in St. Louis, we're wearing their impeachment shirts and buttons and regalia. We had a great chant of impeachment at our opening ceremony that featured Colonel Ann Wright and Jamala Rogers, a longtime activist in St. Louis, St. Louis Alderman Terry Kennedy.
You chanted. What did you chant? Impeach, impeach, impeach?
Impeach, impeach, yeah. And a great song. That was an impeachment song that was sang to close the opening ceremony. One of my purposes being up here on this hilltop in eastern Tennessee is to finish another impeachment song of my own that I look forward to your listeners having a chance to hear by and by.
I would love that. That would be wonderful. Thank you. One of the things that I've sort of missed is the music with this movement. Because I don't see how you can do it without the music.
Well, we had a chance to agitate at the Auburn Hills Palace outside of Detroit, Michigan, last summer when the Freedom of Speech Tour, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, came to Michigan. Neil Young had just written his impeachment song, Let's Impeach the President Now, that he had just released with a new CD. Coming to Highlander Folk School, there are great posters of Pete Seeger being here 25 years ago for the 50th anniversary of the Highlander Folk School Research and Education Center. And I had the privilege to sing with Pete Seeger back in March up in Beacon, New York.
He must be in his 80s now.
He's 88. He's the spryest 88-year-old band you ever saw.
Wow.
And he still has a great voice and plays a mean banjo. And he was not very enthusiastic about the song I was working on, but he was still gracious enough to offer some lyrics and encourage me to write a new song, and that's what I'm working on.
Well, that was really very nice of him.
Oh, he's a very, very generous, gracious man. He's a great hero of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. We need more. We need to employ all of our artistic and creative capabilities, music, song, dance, poetry, and Martin Luther King's famous best weapon of love. And we need the razor's edge of wit. We need to become carnivores of all these sacred cows.
Well, that's the best use for sacred cows. And they are so very yummy that way. We all know that.
With wit and turning weaponry into a symbolic form rather than depleted uranium and Agent Orange and napalm. These weapons are obscene. They're abominations. And the fact that good Americans can resort to making their living by making these weapons, as Bob Bowman told us in North Carolina last week, if we can afford to pay farmers not to grow food, certainly we can afford to pay engineers and mechanics not to make these obscene weapons.
Yes, we could afford to do that, but it would probably be better just to forget the whole mess and just not have anything more to do with killing people.
Hear, hear. This is what the Veterans for Peace are all about.
And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. So it sounds like you went over a lot of different things and you came up with action plans to make sure that, you know, that you could translate, you know, the sentiment and the ideas into action.
Well, Melinda, I can share with you that we had several friends of Mario Penalve's March of the People in St. Louis. Bruce Berry is a Vietnam veteran who I met on the Journey for Humanity with Cindy Sheehan when they came through North Carolina, Virginia, on to D.C. back in July. And Bruce marched with Mario the first days out of Chicago back in June. Sue Castle from Toledo hosted Mario and his co-marchers when they arrived in Toledo in early July. Tina Richards, who's the founder of Grassroots America, she provided a grant to the March of the People and has provided hosts for the marchers when they arrive in Maryland on August 25th. Practically everyone, we had about 350 members from all over the country. Almost everyone is planning to be in Washington, D.C. in September. And
Well, they must care about peace if they want to be there in September.
Well, they're determined.
Mm-hmm.
We realize,
and that's a good thing.
This is part of the urgency. We realize we may not have more generations to train new generations of peace activists. It's up to us. We should not be leaving this up to our children.
Well, no, absolutely not. I mean, that's happened enough times.
Right.
And every generation, it's sad when you think about the generations who really have thought and believed that they had suffered and sacrificed to solve the problem, and then it's presented to them again by the same people and for the same purposes.
So this is not just the moral equivalent to war. It is war. It's being conducted in our name, and it's up to us to do what we can to resist.
Absolutely.
Anthony St. Martin joined Bob Bowman on his tour through North Carolina last week. Anthony is the founder of Pledge to Impeach, has a lot of creative ideas. You don't have to come to Washington, D.C. There are actions you can take wherever you are in your community, even if it's staying home, even if it's just staying home, refusing to participate in business as usual to bring this government down.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there actually are some good signs about bringing the government down. Rove left.
Good riddance.
Well, good riddance to bad trash, right?
Yeah.
And if you take a look at what's going on in terms of what their ability to hold on to things, it does look like they're losing control. Now, that, you know, short term, of course, that gets to be problematical, but long term, it could be very good for us. Because if they can't hold on to control, then, you know, there's much more venue for us to do something about it.
And the peace movement was well aware that if Kerry had been announced the winner in 2004, we would probably have to work at least as hard against a Democratic administration as this Bush-Cheney administration to end the occupation of Iraq and reverse the imperialist policies, militarist policies of this government.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Democrats are you know, up to their eyeballs in this whole project.
Well, that's obvious. Everybody in Congress is culpable. None of them have done what they should have done, which is vote consistently against all of these measures that kept us in the war.
Well, there are a few. There are Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, very few others have opened their eyes, voted with their conscience,
mm-hmm.
not claimed to have been misled, or like Hillary Clinton, didn't have time to read.
I love that excuse.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't have time. That's like Dick Cheney saying, you know, why did Halliburton get in such deep violation with their accounting procedures? He wasn't paid enough to supervise the accounting. He was only paid $37 million. That wasn't enough to actually oversee the financial integrity of the organization. Eh?
The whole thing has been completely mind-boggling. And at this point, what are you seeing in terms of the places that people want to go? You're seeing this kind of coalescing between the impeachment movement and the anti-war and the peace movement. Are there other people and other movements coming out?
Well, there are. I think there are peace and justice movements, and we saw this in Atlanta at the social forum back in June, that this is an international movement. We had a workshop in St. Louis on the Colombian conscientious objection movement. They have universal subscription in Colombia, and it's classist that the well-to-do get 12-month service, and the campesinos get 18-month service, and they're pressed into the most hazardous areas of conflict in Colombia on our so-called war of drugs, another misnamed abomination.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that the Combatants for Peace is Israeli and Palestinian former fighters coming together. We're really seeing an international movement.
So you really are seeing people from every viewpoint coming together to say, no, this is insane, let's stop.
Well, we are, and Americans are slow because they're drugged by overwork and underinformation. Americans perhaps are the most ill-informed, misinformed, of certainly of any so-called advanced societies. But our sense, a growing sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, common humanity with people around the world, that our common survival is at great risk here,
mm-hmm.
and the greatest danger is the government of the United States.
Was there any discussion of what's going on in Venezuela?
Well, there was. I stayed in St. Louis with my niece, who recent graduate of Miami of Ohio in Oxford, Ohio, she was inspired by her commencement speaker, Georgia Congressman John Lewis, who exhorted the graduating class to get in the way of injustice. John Lewis is called the conscience of the house for his integrity at getting in the way of injustice his whole life long, back in the great heyday of struggle against Jim Crow. But my niece, Catherine, has been to Venezuela. One of our projects for Twin Streams Educational Center, from our director, Ana Gutierrez Lycouris, is to promote employee-owned economic cooperatives, which is something that we began here in the southeast, back in the 80s during the Reagan administration. And we think that Venezuela could be a great leader in promoting the concept of employee ownership, that you can go to work for a company and own a part of it, become an owner. We had several employee-owned cooperatives here in North Carolina in the 80s. A lot of inspiration from the Mondragon Spain Cooperativistas, which was a whole consortium of employee-owned economic enterprises that had a grand history of never a layoff, because if there was a downturn in a particular segment, then there was a structure for retraining and re-education for emerging economic opportunities. And these are the kinds of cooperative efforts that we see rising in Latin America, which seems right now to be the locus of the democratic revolution internationally.
So that's very interesting, because then what you're saying is that these are people who are looking at, that's really a different way of getting off the grid, because you're taking it back into the community and into the control of the individuals.
Oh, indeed.
That's amazing. And you've been on an amazing journey in your life, obviously, as you started in a particular direction in the 60s, and it's been very, very much a through line.
Well, I did take off in the 90s to coach soccer and basketball when my boys were young. We built a workshop and a basketball court, and it was time for me to sort of work on my nest building thing. Now my youngest son just turned 21. He's marching with Mario Pinalve. My 27-year-old son just finished his second year as an AmeriCorps volunteer working on Habitat for Humanity homes. And I feel like I've been a little bit liberated from responsibilities of parenting.
Well,
you know, Melinda, you never are completely eliminated.
That's for sure. I well know that. Well, I just looked at the clock, and we probably have to close now, but I want to thank you for being with us today, and I hope you come back to sing that song. You're going to sing it, right?
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Okay, well, that's going to be fun. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Melinda, thank you for your invitation. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, too. Bye.
Bye.
And that's our show for today, Friday, August 17th, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find ways to bring government into alignment with the way we know we should be treating each other personally, in business, and at every other point in our lives. It matters. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio.